Yeah, it's not abnormal of me to actually be up as late as this is. It's I'm coming to you now at around 2:30 in the morning. I had trouble getting to sleep. I'm not really able to get to sleep, mainly because I feel inspired, motivated, and a little bit unaccomplished. But I had a very, very positive experience today, because for the first time, I actually participated in a conversation, in an open conversation on someone else's platform. I mean, I was invited. I mean, he invited everybody. It was on the Sabir Bey podcast on YouTube, and he also has a Patreon and et cetera. So I've been watching him for quite some time in these more recent years, and definitely these recent months, because of the information that he brings across. That's vital information having to deal with being more heritage, Moorish history, and everything associated with it. Because I have come into this consciousness, even though I was always aware of my ethnic and ancestral origins, having to deal with, you know, coming from, you know, part of Africa. But I had no idea what this Moorish science fully entailed and what it associated and what was associated with it, you know. So I'm going to actually play a little bit or a lot of the earlier broadcast with my appearance when I was invited. I was kind of, I don't know, really enthusiastic, excited, and I still feel that way. I think that's mainly why I'm still up, because not that I wanted to refute what I said, but I wanted to add to things that I said on the show earlier this evening that was entitled, "Who Do the Police Work For, Taxpayers or the Corporation?" And Sabir was live from Fort Wayne, Indiana today as the traveling Moor. So I believe he has a lot of invaluable information to share that you can't really quantify. However, I also believe that he needs support, and I will support him in ways that I can do it financially so he's able to bring forth more information to the masses. I'm kind of new at this thing. I mean, well, not really, but recently I've had people motivate me and inspire me to the point of, you know, putting myself out there, being a little bit more transparent. But it's something that is hard to do when you're of a specific background, working within a specific industry vocation, where you do relish privacy beyond that of somebody average in public or whatever. When you work in public service, especially in law enforcement, you really value your privacy. So, man, I didn't clear my throat before I got on here, so please bear with me. These allergies, mainly from allergies. I'm not really, haven't been exposed or infected by this COVID thing. Been really doing my best to take in a lot of fluids, water, stay up on my vitamins and nutrients, and take care of myself on this end so I would not end up, won't end up being in a hospital or anything like that. So, but this is not a conversation about this COVID thing. I'm actually just grateful to be coming to you tonight as I, you know, think about these things and possibly do more work on my podcast channel. So let me play this in the background, and I want to touch in on some points that I made earlier and maybe expound a little bit more.
Peace, who is this? I really don't talk to people. Okay, going once, going twice. Peace. Peace, peace. Let me unmute my, your mic is muted. Your mic muted.
I had a little bit of stumble at the start.
This is crazy. Unmute your mic.
There we go.
I could do a whole book on how you travel. You got feedback. Turn that down, son. You got feedback. It's the cheapest route.
Gotcha.
You ever, if I pulled up right now, anything online, I saw hotels in Dubai for $43, 20, and these are dope packs. You got a feedback on your phone, but yeah, man, it's so crazy. Let me know when you ready, fam.
I got a close buddy of mine, brother, that he backpacked from New Mexico, saved up a little bit of money, went to Morocco, lived there for a year, and then started backpacking to all kinds of different places, man. Yeah.
You know that the University of Keween was founded by Tuareg or Nomad people? People don't even
let them know where the Tuareg is or where the Tuareg is.
The Tuareg. They made a Jeep and people probably got the Tuareg Jeep.
Yeah, they do. Jeep,
right? So the Tuareg. Yeah, you good. So the University of Keween was founded by the nomads. Nomads is like gypsies. That's who they really are. So we are those people. So as I was traveling, like you said, I was like, yo, how did they do all this stuff back then?
And it's cheap. And it's really cheap.
This is how they lock people down, bro. They lock you down by your job. Karis, one thing, you better know how to rap in case your degree don't work.
And speaking of KRS-One, Sabir actually is having a presentation this Friday, the 12th. Let me see if I can pull this up here. It's titled The Teachers, Sabir Bey and KRS-One Exclusive Interview, covering propaganda, miseducation, human rights, mind warfare, systemic genocide, and hidden nationality. And it's going to be on the 12th. Today's the 11th, so it's going to be tomorrow, being Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern time on the Sabir Bey Show here on YouTube. Okay, so I might try to post something up where I'm going to send this to my podcast, and hopefully maybe I get more people to join this or watch this presentation with KRS-One and Sabir Bey. He's spoken up very highly on the show a lot of times, and it'll be really good to hear from Brother KRS-One.
We don't work. You follow me? So he's trying to tell people this in hip hop because he may be, besides Immortal Technique, the freest hip hop artist out here. I'm going to be real with you. KRS-One probably the freest hip hop artist to this day.
Yeah, I had a little bit of trouble when I was trying to get situated and get on the air. I actually had the the playback, the actual feed from the YouTube. I had the YouTube tab open as well as the StreamYard that I was trying to connect with. And, you know, I basically was mirroring the broadcast and I didn't mute it, you know, before I was accepted onto StreamYard to join the conversation. So I started off at the 50:38 mark and, I joined the conversation from that point on to the end of the show for the day earlier. Why do the police work? Or excuse me, who do the police work for? Taxpayers or the corporation? And on the Sabir Bey Show on YouTube earlier today, and he went live, did a live stream from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he was able to allow me to join on in the conversation. And I went in hoping that, you know, it would be a very productive conversation exchange, information exchange. And yeah, I feel that it was, not because of my involvement, of course, but, you know, because I'm learning, you know, and I was able to learn, still able to learn from him. And, you know, with the information that he's been putting out here, that is very, very vital information to, consider for yourselves. On the path to Moorish consciousness.
that don't owe nothing to nobody. And I look at him as inspiration, not because of anything. I'm looking at him. And we're going to have this interview Friday on Friday. We're talking Friday at 4 o'clock. So I'm looking at him, and as he inspiring me, like, yo, don't sell your rights. This is what you got to do. I'm looking at him. And this is why when you play other people's songs, you get blocked, because they all copywritten. And people don't understand this. They're copywritten. And the artists don't get that. It's not the artist. This is why I tell people, all these artists out here, instead of these artists spending all this money, why don't you sit with somebody to understand how contracts work? Because the artist should never be going to jail. It should be the clients, the accountant and the agents going to jail, not you. You shouldn't go to jail, but see, you don't know that because they have to keep you busy. The artist should never go to jail. It should always be the accountant, because he went to school for that. That's the this is what we need to get to these young cats before. And this is why sometimes they don't want us to talk to these cats. If y'all ever noticed that, they don't want us to talk to them, because if we sparked something in them to make them think, they're gonna be like, yo. If we spark something on somebody on a platform about the police, how the police can be locked up for the RICO law, I want everybody to Google the racketeering RICO laws. Look it up.
That's an organization.
It's an organization.
If you got more than like what, two couple people, man, you could be considered that. You got a little, so your little friends that y'all be hanging out with on the corner, and they take pictures of y'all, because if you really don't something, they gonna take pictures of you, and they got you right there. So all we, you know, just.
Yes, it's, and people don't even realize how many people have, let's be realistic, and I got y'all three brothers on here.
Hello.
How many times have you seen on any platform they talked about the police department being an organized crime organization? They don't talk about that.
Yeah, I never seen it.
Who do the police work for? You look like an intelligent brother, right? Let me talk to y'all for a second.
Well, first of all, let me just put it out there. I'm a retired law enforcement from Southern California. So I'm going to duck the darts right now. But I'll say that I've always had enlightenment, but I've recently became empowered, and it's through your efforts and a lot of the reading that I've done. As a matter of fact, I've received some packages today involving some of the books from your book list. So,
okay, thanks.
So yeah, and thank you. And I support you from afar. And I figure I can hope I can shed some light to people with a position, a learned position that I've been in, because I'm retired from law enforcement. No longer am a cop. There are a number of us that were in the fold for some degree of time and have become real with ourselves. And you have to understand, you don't have to understand anything I say, because I lived it. Mm. I went in during Rodney King, worked during that period of time, always had to prove myself more so than the next guy. And at the same time, I knew what I was doing inside wasn't completely 100% right.
Wow.
And I didn't come into fuller consciousness of this aspect, especially with what you say with regard to who do you represent, the taxpayer or the corporation.
So my mindset at this point, as I'm contributing to the conversation or just getting started, I'm a bit nervous, because I'm a rather private person, as most anybody is, and at times I can be a bit of an introvert, I do have a grasp on public speaking and whatnot, but it's just a scenario that I just went in on and just winged it. The thing of it too is, there's just so much behind the experiences that I faced in such a dynamic profession that affected so many people. And all this stuff is just going around in my head, and I want to be able to convey the information to people from a point to where people can understand what it is I'm talking about. So, yeah. So I'm really grateful to have, participated and been involved in this conversation. And I'm, it was my hope to really just get on here and make some sense. And, not from an egotistical position, definitely not clout chasing, as I have said. He basically extended an open invitation to people that, were experienced in law enforcement or attorneys, practicing attorneys or lawyers. So you know, I click the link and here I am having a conversation with, you know, somebody who, you know, I've come to value as far as, you know, the information that he's been able to provide to people and share willingly with little to no investment given to him in return. I mean, he's doing this freely on his own time, right? So it's only fair that, you know, those of us rally and support this gentleman for doing what he's doing. Support this brother, Sabir Bey. It depends on the it may depend on the municipality that you work for.
Mm-hmm.
I was a sheriff's deputy that worked for a contract city. So that added an additional nuance to it. And it depended on what city you worked in as far as what you could and could not do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was based on the demographics and the sociology of the area. And that's a fact. And I went in on a department that finished a class action lawsuit that I wasn't a part of, but I was looked at from the time that I filled out application papers to the time I stepped away from the job.
Mm.
I knew I was. And like I said, I always was aware, because I'm a product of the 60s. I'm 50 something years old.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Ron Settles, the Ron Settles case in Signal Hill.
You know what, brother? I didn't learn about that till I moved there, because I live in LA now. But I didn't learn, right? Not too far from that part. I didn't even know that. Like, they started telling me that history. I said, oh, that's what happened.
So you have to understand, when you have been in law enforcement, there's a lot of things that you keep away from the general public. And it's not necessarily out of malice. It's because, you know, people don't quite understand the gravity of certain situations. And there's things that tend to get out that end up being a problem, you know, for people in their career. You know, you jeopardize your standing as an individual law enforcement officer, and you stand to place the jeopardy of the industry, if you will, or the profession itself by, you know, shedding light on certain things or letting people know about how things work. But there needs to be transparency, you know, because, you know, it's easy to lose sight of certain things when you actually are working in that. You have to really control your biases. You have to control your thought process. You have to treat everyone fairly as much as you can. But yeah, I just wanted to clarify as I go along here from the video from earlier.
Cause we was from the East Coast. So you know how you hear things. I didn't learn it until I moved to Cali.
And a lot of the dynamic associated with Moore's consciousness and science wasn't necessarily here in Southern California when I grew up.
Mm.
Okay. Because it had to do more with Black Power, Black Panther Party. A lot of people don't realize that the inception of what is known today as SWAT, the Shamar Moore television show, SWAT started because of them, of LAPD attacking the Black Panther Party's headquarters on 42nd and Central.
I heard about that too.
Now that was in 1969 when that happened. It was part of an initiative to do away with the so-called Black Messiah. It was basically a federal mandate to neutralize groups that were considered divisive. Basically divisive and that were potentially damaging to the status quo. So, yeah, that was the actual very first ever, at least in the United States, if not the world, the first SWAT call out. And it happened in Los Angeles in 1969. I believe 41st or 40, I might have said 42nd and Central, but Central and I believe in 41st Street. Yeah, rest in peace to brother G Bone Capone, who actually made the movie. I believe it was called 41st and Central. And he recently passed away from health complications. His father was a member of the Black Panther Party during that time. And if I'm not mistaken, he was there during the, I guess you can say, the assault on the offices of the Black Panther Party in Los Angeles that day.
I personally benefited from that because I went to school in the LA Unified School District as a kid and was fed breakfast because of them. So a lot of this is personal to me.
So yes, the free breakfast program was instituted more widely after the efforts of the Black Panther Party. It was because of them that we were able to have breakfast in the morning before going to school. And it was because it was also incentive, or it also prompted the school district to serve breakfast at the schools on campuses. All because of the efforts of the Black Panther Party.
See, I grew up in a, you have to understand, I'm a little bit overcome by this because I'm thinking of my history.
No, it's all good. Take your time, brother. It's all love. Take your time.
I don't want to take anybody else to space either. You know, I'm
trying to send up what
you have on here, okay? But I grew up in a setting where we had no chance in life. And I ended up in police work out of a response of how I was treated. And I thought I was going to make a difference. I wasn't a Sambo. I wasn't an Uncle Tom, or whatever you want to call me. I wasn't a sellout. As a matter of fact, I used to give lectures to guys in the academy about jamming up people, because the person you might jam up might be me off duty.
Yes.
Now you can see that I'm lighter skinned. You know, I don't look black, but I've been in situations where I've had to talk people down from situations, man. I would say, man, look, you see, I'm the only one out here, right? I am black. I have NWA playing in my patrol car right now.
That was just to illustrate and you know, help relate, let people know that I was relating to the people. Even though, I'll be honest, NWA wasn't one of my favorite all-time groups, but it was during the time that actually one of their songs that got radio airplay, there was several of them that did, but I remember the track called 100 Miles and Running. And I remember liking the beat to it, because that's kind of a thing that I'll get into this later in this presentation. But I actually used to DJ. I started out DJing when I was a teenager, learned how to DJ, and got pretty decent at it through a number of parties. Anyway, by the way, I've always had an admiration for, you know, hip hop music. I grew up around hip hop, certain elements of it. I may not be as well versed in it or as deeply involved or have been as I once had been. But I grew up on West Coast hip hop and, you know, a lot of the East Coast music that made its way, you know, and ended up on my playlist quite a bit. So I just think the NWA reference, you know, to be more relatable. And it is true that the agency I once worked for, which was surprising to me that they had AM/FM stereos in the patrol cars, you know, in other departments, like I believe LAPD, they did not have AM/FM radios in some of their cars, at least when I went on ride-alongs back in the late 80s, early 90s. I don't recall having them being equipped with conventional AM/FM stereos. But the department I worked for, they did. And I had it tuned in, actually, to, I think I used to listen to either 92.3, The Beat, or 104.7 FM. So that'll tell you. And I did not work, you know, I worked in the greater Los Angeles area at the time.
He said NWA.
No, because we had the patrol cars that we had AM FM stereos.
I know.
I was listening to K-Day back then. I was listening to, you know, what was golden age of hip hop. I worked in law enforcement in the early 90s, late 80s. So I don't know. I'm getting off track, but I don't want to go on to
it. No, it's all good. This conversation, brother, let me tell you something. I'm glad you came on, because I'm from Philly, and I've lived in L.A. for like 11, 12 years now. And my cousin used to be a Philadelphia police officer, right? And I'm going to try to get him on the line. He's going to tell you the story. So we are from South Philly. You know, NWA was the shot. We used to pull up on the corner and be like, F the police. That was our famous joint at the time, right? Because we like, they saying this about the Poe, you know? And when my cousin went into, he was a Philadelphia police officer. So what he did, they framed him because he was standing outside with a bunch of known people who was hustling. So there was a cop named Keenan. And when he was standing outside with them, they rounded him up too. And he said, yo, I'm a police officer. Told him, showed him his badge, right? But they eventually got rid of him because he was more so, you know how he was, because when you're a police officer, sometimes they tell you don't be around certain people. They'll tell you don't be around.
And that's absolutely true. And that's part of the, I'm kind of almost at loss for words right now because it's like 3 o'clock in the morning where I'm at. But when you are a candidate and an applicant in law enforcement, in the profession, there, you know, it's inferred and also expressed that you cannot really associate with people involved in criminal activity, you know, regardless mainly of what it is. But it depends, you know, the thing of it is, you know, a lot of us come from, you know, certain communities. And we're not able to pick and choose our family members, right? So that's kind of a dilemma that you end up facing when you choose that line of work. You know, you got your boss telling you that you can't hang around certain people, you can't be certain places. You know.
You follow me? They would tell
me family members that can be around. They told me not to be around family members.
Do you see what I'm saying? So these are people that you grew up with. So off duty, he was around them. So they framed him eventually, you know, and that made him a more of a criminal. So he said when he first started being a police officer, he saw them putting something in a dude's car. And he said, what are you doing? Like, are you serious? Like, you're not really doing it, right? This is what he's saying. So he was more outspoken because of where he came from.
So, yes, there are shady tactics that some that don't deserve to be wearing a badge will resort to, such as throw down guns, planning contraband, setting people up, taking cash from people. But there would have been really, I'm not saying that, I don't know, I didn't see it if it went down in front of me. And I was looking for it, but I came in at a time that it would have been really stupid of anybody to pull anything like that in front of me. I mean, if it was done, they concealed it and I didn't see anything. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't going to sacrifice my integrity and my standing as a human being, nor my professional career that I really had value in, just because somebody was overzealous in the way that they did the job. I didn't accept that. And I was more than fairly outspoken about it too. I was unafraid. I had the respect of those that I worked with day in and day out, at least for the most part. At least I like to think so. Some have outright told me.
He checked them.
And that's what they didn't like about him. So some people go in it to try to make the change. Mortal Technique said that. He said, when you go into a system trying to change it, the system winds up changing you.
If you let it.
You ain't see that brother that shot himself a month ago?
Yeah. Actually, I was gonna cover that. I actually took a photograph of me back when I was first starting the job in a similar uniform. I'll send it to you. I'll email it to you.
Send it to me.
Picture of a headshot of him and me together, and they look the same. And it reminded me of some experiences that I went through in my career, and the feeling of depression that I had because I wasn't changing. I wasn't changing shit. I mean, excuse me, the language.
It's all good. Cause I feel that way right now. I'll be like, am I really changing something? Getting on, like, I didn't go to sleep last night and I'm sitting here like, what am I really changing? I'm like.
Yeah, that was the deputy from Lafayette Parish Sheriff's Department, Lafayette, Louisiana. That happened some about a month ago or so, as Brother Sabir had indicated. Brother's name was Clyde. I have to look it up. His first name was Clyde. Let me look it up and I'll get it back to you in just a moment.
I'll be ready to throw up my hands, brother, because I'm like, it's like, what am I changing? If I'm on here every day trying to get people to think.
And from your topic line, who do the police work for, taxpayers or corporations? Well, I'll tell you something.
Yeah, it was Clyde Kerr, the third. I refer to him as Mr. Clyde Kerr. But he lost sight of who he was. And I'm not judging what he did. But he lost sight of who he was and did not know his nationality. I mean, there's a parallel to draw because we've both kind of favored each other. And you know the term, I guess, doppelganger. So I looked at his photograph and compared it to one of my early photographs as I was starting my career. And we resemble one another. And I also went through a bit of depression myself. I felt like I was trapped. I felt like I wasn't making a difference. So the only difference is I'm still here. I moved on. Because I was aware of who I was. Even though I wasn't fully conscious about being a Moor, I knew there was more additional to me. That was not the sum of my existence. Being in law enforcement. And then understanding that law enforcement sheriffs were actually an inception, a Moorish inception. That's something that I had in my mind. And I even believed back then, perhaps, but I like to think that I was spiritually guided to move on and do something else. And it's unfortunate that Mr. Kerr, Deputy Sheriff, Lafayette Parish, Louisiana, couldn't see past that job title. I had one night that I sat for 16 hours in front of a automotive dealership just because the power went out. That was overtime. That was overtime situation. Non-voluntary overtime. I was actually ordered to do that, to pull that duty, because part of your job is to safeguard property. You protect property and life, but you protect and safeguard property.
I want to work overtime. I didn't care to work overtime. The majority, you know, I'm not letting any real secrets out, but the majority of people that are in that line of work are on overtime. So they could afford houses, all the things and the stuff that they get, like the trucks, the jet skis, all the toys, right? So they do this mandatory overtime thing. And I didn't want to work overtime. I lived within my means. I have my, you know, I'm a military service veteran. So I have my home. I was married. You know, I had the 2.1 cars in the house, whatever, right? And I was just living my life and I wanted to go home. When I went home, I went home. I didn't take the cop shit with me. I wasn't your t-shirt, fanny pack, jeans wearing cop when I was off duty.
He's stupid.
You know, and I'm not saying I was more really Afrocentric. I was just me, bro. I grew up in Los Angeles. I remember when I was 19 years old and I had an LA County sheriff that wanted to whoop my ass and call me out my name. Out of nowhere. But see, my uncles warned me about that. I had three uncles. They're all ancestors now. They all got killed by street stuff. My three uncles. I remember one of my uncles used to come home from the joint every so often with a new welt on his face. Wow. Or with some new injury. And LA County sheriffs, either LA County sheriffs caused it or LAPD caused it. Because he used to speak up for himself. You know, not from really from the Moorish perspective, but
no, I
he used to call him on it. What are you jacking with me for? I'm not doing anything wrong. And you know, I didn't come up with a silver spoon in my mouth. My maternal grandmother grew up with six kids by herself in South Central Los Angeles during 1940s and 50s. So I never had a chance to make it. Right. So when I got out of service in the late 80s, job opportunities, you know, hip hop, you know, I was a DJ, whatever, you know, hip hop wasn't quite paying the bills. didn't have a 401k, didn't have a retirement. So guess what was out there? The safe thing is a civil service job. 60 grand a year was a lot of money back then to me and to those that were in my friend circle. And you make the choice of how much shit you want to put up with for that 60 grand a year.
Whoo, man. Do you know, growing up in Philly, and that's why I said we need to have these types of panel discussions. Sheriff Green used to be the sheriff in Philadelphia. And I remember going, I used to go to his office, right? And I used to sit there with all the sheriffs. No lie, this is the funniest thing ever. So they was telling me that if the people knew the law, the sheriff works for the people. This is what they told me. Sheriff Green's off. Y'all can look up Sheriff Green right now. He got locked up for corruption, though. This is the thing. Like you said, you're fighting. So he got locked up for corruption. So when I used to go to his office on Broad Street in Philadelphia, I used to sit there. And it was another brother that was in there. So as we're talking, he said, if the people knew the law, the people can get a judge locked up because the sheriff works for the people. This is the funniest thing ever, right? So he said, you need to come in and do a class. This is what he told me. You need to talk to the sheriffs, right? And
right. Sheriffs are elected to their position. Police chiefs are selected. They work their way up. They work their way through. They work their way around. They press a lot of the flesh. They curry a lot of favors. And they're selected. That was the case with when Daryl Gates left LAPD and was replaced by Willie Williams, who, by the way, was the chief in Philadelphia prior to coming to Los Angeles. And at the time, he was considered they didn't want him. I'll put it to you like that. Not to go through my resume, but I worked for LAPD for a period of time in a civilian capacity before I ended up in my sworn job as a sheriff's deputy. And before I became a full-time cop, I've been around the industry for several years before I went to the academy and became what they call sworn.
And I said, well, what would I say to Mike? Well, he said, what you just told me. Like, literally, like he said, you know what's going on. So the local police officers, which is under a home rule charter of a city, they're under a home rule charter. So the sheriff works for the people if they knew. So what happens?
And he's definitely on point. Municipalities, city charters. It's basically what governs ordinances and different practices within a city.
Since the people are not paying them, they're getting paid from the municipality, the corporation.
Exactly.
Now, the sheriffs deal with moving people from prison to prison. That's how it is in Philly.
So which I did.
Right? They're the ones that's in the courtroom. So imagine if people were woke and they say, no, lock that goddamn judge up for what? Practicing law on the bench. Because you can't practice law from the bench, and people don't understand that. You cannot practice law from the bench. You're just a judge. And this is why in Philadelphia, I could have been a minor judiciary judge. I don't know if people know this. You can look it up in Pennsylvania. A minor judiciary judge is one who studied Title 75, Title 42, and Title 18. Those three. Look it up on Purdon's. Title 75 of state codes, Title 18, one is crimes and criminal procedures, one is traffic, and one is civil.
And I didn't mean to be rude in interjecting right now and as well as during the earlier broadcast, but someone had typed up on the screen live on YouTube there that 60K not worth working for LAPD, and they're absolutely right. But I went on to clarify that $60,000 a year was basically 1980s, early 90s salary potential. Not that that was the top cap, but because there are cops that are making, you know, 100, maybe 100,500 a year, but they were never home. There were either commuter cops that basically never went home. They always worked day after day, including court. And I touch on that during this broadcast, I believe.
To be a minor judiciary judge.
I'm sorry to interject. I didn't mean to interrupt. But not to say that this is semantics, they call it legalese for a reason, and they will trip you up each and every time on technicalities.
Here you go.
That's what it's about. That's how the game is played, y'all. That's how the game is played.
And they play
that 60 grand a year, y'all, that somebody mentioned about that. That 60 grand a year that I mentioned earlier, that was in 1980s money. So that was a lot of money to me. That was basically before the golden age of hip hop. I'm talking like, you know, and when I played NWA in the car, you know, it was on the local radio station. It was 92.3 The Beat back then. It used to come in. And usually on a Friday night, you know, just to get me keyed up, you know, and just do my job. Because it's hard to say this now to people, but people that know me understand. I had the best of intentions. And I looked in the mirror every single day and said I was going to do the best that I could for the people that I thought I was representing. But the area that I worked in was predominantly a certain way. And I was a sheriff's deputy working for contract cities. For a time I worked in inmate transportation. And I'm going to tell y'all something. Your inmates, prisoners, know a lot. Because especially the ones that are doing hard time, that are in special housing, I always used to let them, you know, it was their legal entitlement to go to the law library. So I didn't trip on that.
Yeah, you know, not that it was surprising, because you know you have people, and I don't mind as a devil's workshop, right? So you had people that were incarcerated, that a number of them invested their time wisely, and they studied and you know read up on laws and legal procedure, legal definitions, and I would run across some of these, you know, individuals, you know, during transfers, you know, from, you know, state prison to different county jails or our county jail and other jail locations, lockup facilities, custodial facilities, such as mental health facilities. And a number of these people that I transported, I'll be honest, they knew the law better than I did. Just saying. So it's like, hey, there you go. I saw cats, people that were doing, they're still in now. You dig? And these are guys going to the law library. And they knew more about the law and processes of the law, including technicalities and legalese, better than I did as a sheriff's deputy. Even though, and I did go through standards of training, had over 1,000 hours of training, not including field training, and the own training that you do yourself.
Peace Officers Standards Training, State of California. And I'm not going to knock the training. The training was incredible. I mean, some of the most comprehensive training I've ever received. And among the training that I've had, I've carried a lot of it with me to this day. It even goes with some prior military training I've had. You know, it becomes a part of you. But yeah, I wasn't necessarily a legal practitioner. Basically, I had to be familiar with the elements of what constituted a crime. Was it corpus delicti? Reasonable suspicion? Probable cause? All those factors to reach a legal conclusion. More often than not, I was off on base.
Because there's other training that you do on your own, including martial arts, et cetera. Okay? But you have to invest in yourself when you're doing it. And I was also training newbies about the processes of racial profiling and stereotyping, just like I mentioned earlier. And there's the name. Brother Diop Kamau.
Yeah, there's you can criminally profile people, but you cannot base your assessments on race. Definitely not race alone. You can profile criminals basically on your experiences and different data for you to reach a justifiable conclusion. To take police action or not. Because not everybody's a criminal. Not everyone is a criminal. And you don't treat everyone like criminals either. You go by how people behave. That's what I like to think I did throughout my career. Not to say that I was perfect, but I did the best that I could. Used to go by Don Jackson, Hawthorne Police Department, back in the 1989.
I lived in Hawthorne when I first moved out there, dude.
Yeah, Ice Cube. Yeah, Cube did. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I mean, circles of degrees of separation is funny. I'm not saying that, you know, for clout or nothing.
Dude, that's crazy. Yeah, because I didn't even know when I moved to Hawthorne. They said, oh, Cube House is like two blocks away. I was like, really? Because that's where I was at first when I moved out. I was downtown on Hope Street. Then I moved. It was Hawthorne, then Hope Street.
I lived in Inglewood for a couple of years. Used to venture over to Hawthorne to see movies at the Hawthorne Mall. The Hawthorne Six Theater. Yeah, back in the early 80s, late 70s.
Then Long Beach. That's how I was moving around out there since when I went out to LA.
I'm a Watts baby, brother. I'm a Watts baby.
Watts was crazy. Yo, y'all think, listen, I'm from Philly. When I drove through Watts, my G, I said, what the hell is this? Like, it looked like a war zone, my G. Like, I said, and I, you know, I would get out and walk around and watch, but Watts was great. That's where Tyrese is from too. So it's so much like history, but I'm like, I got to get in the streets and talk to these people. I have to give them for where I even came from and what the laws are and how this thing works.
I salute you because you were in a position to do that. I wasn't necessarily free to do that, you see, because I was under the construct. I was in the Matrix without fully, before the movie came out, the Matrix, okay? I was in a Matrix. I hadn't understood that. I had my little DD214. That said, I can get a VA loan to get myself a house. I had a car. You know what I'm saying? I did a little street racing here and there and that. I was DJing. I learned how to DJ in 1982. Did a little house parties here and there. You know, whatever. Now, whatever your feelings might be about, I see something. I don't even want to even entertain that.
You talking about this one right here? Sheriffs are incompetent of violating the people. This is the thing. And this is why
I'm not saying to paint anybody with a broad brush. I'm not saying I'm relating and intimating my experiences here from my perspective.
Yeah, that's what we try to clear up. This is exactly, but I'm with you. This is why I said for me to sit with the sheriffs and them to share with.
Now this here says someone posted up on the thread here that sheriff are in, and I'm quoting verbatim the way it's typed. Sheriff are incompetent and violating the people. Unalienable rights, etc. So I was responding to that, to what was posted on there. And to paint an entire industry or a profession with a broad brush like that is just something I feel is unfair. Unless you've lived in my shoes and been through the experiences that I have, who are you to judge? Just saying.
Me, what the laws are. The sheriffs do know the law, but the sheriffs are not getting paid by the people. And the people, do you know that city council members and these people are supposed to have meetings with people? I think it's a weekly or monthly. They're supposed to sit with people. There's constitutions. When I moved to LA, brother, I went and got the state constitution and the U.S. Constitution. I went to every state like state office, literally, and was getting the constitutions of California. Like, and I would give them out in my classroom that I would give civics class in Long Beach. So it's, again, the responsibility is on us also. It ain't just on them, but we have to get to a platform to explain it that is not biased. Majority of the stuff that we see on social media is biased. Okay, this is the law. You got to do X, Y, and Z. No. We put those people in those positions. Yep. I'm a victim of my environment. When my son got killed, he was a victim of his environment. We're all victims of our environment. You see what I'm saying? And this is, a lot plays a part in this. And this is why I didn't even want to be a judge in Philly, because when I sat there, when my son was younger, right? Sat there, I think Amir was 3 or 4 at the time. And everybody that I mentioned, y'all can look them up and I can guarantee you they all was locked up for bribery, seriously. Thomasina Times, traffic court judge. Look her up. I gave you Sheriff Green. I gave you
Thomasina Times. I'll call that name.
Right? She was a Philadelphia traffic court judge. And I remember going into this room and she told a young brother one day, this is going to be on his criminal record. I said, that's not a crime. A moving violation is not a crime. And she said, it's not about who you know. She said, it's how much money you bring in. I never forget saying that when my son was 4 years old. After it was over, I said that. And it made me say, well, why would I want to be a part of this and live a miserable life lying to people? Everybody from Shaka Fatah, look him up too. They all went against it when they went in it and accept the money and then tried to turn around and do something different. Shaka Fatah, you can look him up too, went to jail. Every last one of these people went to jail. Because one thing I've learned, that you can't try to play that game and then turn around and flip in the middle of this motherfucker, or you don't do what they want you to do. Because they got you. This is the game. That's why I never wanted to be an attorney, because I knew what was going on.
I knew the
facts of the law. You follow me? I knew all of it. I knew that it's only civil and criminal. There's only a civil and criminal case. So what is a moving violation? That's not a crime. That's not a crime.
Infraction.
Thank you. And infractions, people, look it up. Infractions are a breach of a contract. Listen again. Infractions are a breach of contract. So the key would be, where is the contract I have with you?